Hello, this is Don reading on Tuesday, November 28, and I will be reading the Danville Commercial News today. The first page has a news item here about a city council meeting coming up, and the title is Alderman Might Increase Pension Fee. A utility tax is back off the table, but a higher flat fee public safety pension fee is included in the loan proposal city officials are presenting to aldermen tonight for initial action as part of the city's tax levy. Under the proposal, residents and those with structures less than 5,000 square feet would pay $267 annually, or $22.25 a month, in the public safety pension fee on their sewer and garbage bills. This is an increase of $171 more a year for residents from the current $96 annual fee. The monthly fee increase would be $14.25 more a month for the first year. The fee would be discounted 50% for anyone receiving senior, veteran, or disabled exemption on their property taxes. Those residents would pay $133.50 annually, or $11.17 a month instead of the current $8 a month. In a memo from Mayor Scott Eisenhower to aldermen, Eisenhower states, quote, "I believe this is a reasonable accommodation for the segment of our population of which most of you had concerns," end of quote. For properties in excess of 5,000 square feet, there would be a flat fee of $600 annually, or $50 a month, for properties less than $50,000 net taxable value. For properties with a net taxable value greater than $50,000, the flat fee would be $1,020 annually, or $85 monthly. This means churches and nonprofits also would pay toward the city's pension debt at a smaller amount than previously discussed, Eisenhower says. And he went on to say, "I believe this satisfies the desire by some to ensure all in the community are contributing, but does so in a manageable way." The proposal still includes a 10% city property tax increase. Eisenhower said they've listened to concerns and tried to address them in a way that still sets the stage for a 20-year plan with dedicated revenue sources to address paying off the city's pension $105 million unfunded liability by 2040. A plan to retire the pension debt involves the blended property tax and public safety fee increase revenue. The total amount, property tax and public safety pension fee determined annually by the city council, needed each year for the pensions, goes up 10% the first 2 years, 9% the third year, 4% the fourth year, and 3% the remaining 18 years. There was too much impact on businesses with a utility tax, Eisenhower said. Eisenhower also stated in his letter, quote, "While in the end my proposal will not be favorable to some, I am in hopes that it will at least indicate we have listened to the many people who have come forward to address this issue and have taken your input very seriously," end of quote. The full city council is expected to act on the tax levy and increase property tax and pension fee on December 5. In other business tonight, members of the city council's public services committee will consider approving a $75,000 in Community Development Block Grant Economic Development Funds to be used to offset a funding gap for Vermilion Valley Produce's expansion project at 310 South Street. Vermilion Valley Produce Company plans to invest $300,000 in addition to the CDB to expand its existing building and purchase additional equipment to expand operations. The project is expected to create at least 5 full-time jobs over a year's time, with 3 of those benefiting persons of low to moderate incomes, according to city officials. The hiring of additional staff could start in December. Planned completion of the project is February or March 2018. Central Illinois Produce and its affiliated group of companies, Gateway Produce and Vermilion Valley Produce, form one of Illinois' largest wholesale produce distributors south of Chicago, according to provided business information. The company distributes bulk and processed fruits and vegetables, especially produce items, fresh herbs, salads, and soups, in addition to dairy products. When possible, the company purchases locally grown produce from the Midwest region. The expansion will add 3,560 square feet to the existing 10,000 square foot facility with the required racking, cold storage equipment, and office equipment for food distribution businesses. The company has added a significant new client base, primarily domiciled in the state of Indiana, but desires to keep and expand the business in the greater downtown area with the support of the community, the project expansion paperwork reads. Busey Bank and Champaign would provide the $300,000 loan. The CDBG funds would be used to purchase racking and other pertinent equipment for the expanded facility. Another action to be taken tonight is authorizing application to the Illinois Housing Development Authority for up to $75,000 in its abandoned properties program to assist with acquisition, demolition, and greening of abandoned residential properties in the East Main Street area. And finally, the action to be considered tonight will be amending city code pertaining to solicitors. The amendment includes a process to refuse the issue of a license and for suspension or revocation of a license. An identification badge will also be issued from the city. Well, that concludes the news from the proposed city council meeting on tonight. So apparently they have a very busy agenda. And then on the front page of the news today is a beautiful color photo of shoppers. And the caption for the photo reads, "Shoppers look over the offerings during the 2016 Christmas Village Craft Fair, an event that always draws a crowd. This year's fair will run Friday and Saturday at Harrison Park Clubhouse, 1300 West Voorhees Street." The news article accompanying the photo is headlined "Greeting the Season," and it's in beautiful red and green print, festive for the season with decorations hanging off of the fonts. Clubhouse being ready to host annual Christmas Village Craft Fair. An annual tradition for many locals looking for Christmas and other items for themselves or others on their list is back again Friday and Saturday at Harrison Park Clubhouse. The Christmas Village Craft Fair will be inside the clubhouse, 1300 West Voorhees Street, from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Friday and 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Saturday. It is sponsored by the city's recreational department. The fair has free admission, a cafe with homemade hot food, and lots of great gift ideas. Danville Recreation Manager Cindy Parsons said there will be 30 craft vendors, including 25 returning vendors and 5 new ones. She said the new vendors have an assortment of different crafts they will be selling. So she also said some new items will be hand-turned wood and antler items, fine prints and books, stained glass, and seasonal items. Other items will include country woodcrafts, quilted jackets, vintage remix, old world Santas, ornaments, hand sewing, carvings, scarves, doll clothes and beds, peanut brittle, floral blankets, snowmen, handmade socks, kettle corn, stamping up crochet and knitting items, soy candles, knives, caramels, wreaths, photo albums, handcrafted jewelry, gift baskets, and baked goods. One returning vendor is Barbara Woodard, who got her first sock-making machine about 12 years ago and now has 28 of the antique machines. Woodard said the sock machines look like meat grinders. They're circular, and she cranks them by hand with different cylinders and needles to make different sized socks. She said it was just love at first sight after her sister bought one when she came to help with Woodard's youngest daughter's wedding in 2005. Woodard then ordered 2 on eBay, and her collection started from there. Woodard said the sock machines were made under different brand names from the mid-1860s to about 1920. She travels to different so-called crank-in events to crank out socks. Woodard also fell in love with and had to have a spinning wheel when she saw one. "I now spin a lot of my yarn to knit with," she said. Woodard has been selling socks she makes for about 12 years now. She makes them for infants on up and in all different colors and designs. She's also participated several years in the Christmas Village Craft Fair at Harrison Park Clubhouse. "It's just a quiet, nice atmosphere," she said about the craft fair, adding that she also enjoys seeing the same customers come back. Parsons said she's looking forward to having another great craft fair. She said they're getting the building ready for vendors now. Every space possible is used in the building, so they have to move all the tables and chairs to the basement. Parsons lists off the great aspects of the event as follows. Free event, close parking, great atmosphere, friendly people and vendors, good food, and lots of handmade unique items for sale. She said, it's just a wonderful event, and we were happy to be able to use the historical Harrison Park Clubhouse for this event. That concludes the information about the upcoming crafts fair on this weekend, Friday and Saturday. Here's an article entitled, Local Shriners Help Club Members After St. Louis Fire. A warehouse owned by a shrine club in St. Louis caught fire and burned down 2 weeks ago, and with it went presents intended for ill children at local hospitals. To offer relief, Vermilion County's Gail Grotto and other organizations associated with the Freemasons are raising money and collecting presents. When Master Shriner Casey Horde found out about what Shriners in St. Louis lost, he said he didn't notice too many people reaching out, so he wanted to find a way to help. So he said, the way I looked at it, for a lot of kids, this would be the last Christmas they have. Horde is a member of the Eastern Illinois Shrine Club, the 32nd Degree of the Scottish Knight, the Homer Lodge, the Olive Branch, and Vice President-elect of the Gail Grotto. He said, it's really cool to see us all come together for one common cause. Shriners are an appendage of Freemasonry, the oldest fraternal organization recognized worldwide. According to its website, the group unites men of good character who come from all backgrounds and walks of life. Horde said, Shrine Club is one of the only organizations whose donations completely benefit children. Monetary and toy donations will be accepted now through December 12. Money can be sent via PayPal at https://www.paypal.me/giftsfromlight. I'm going to take a break from the news and turn to the obituary page now. And the first obituary I see is for John A. Owens, age 70, of Danville, who lost his brief battle with cancer on November 25, 2017, at Presence United Samaritans Medical Center in Danville. A celebration of John's life will be at 1 p.m. Friday, December 1, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center, 3940 North Vermilion, Danville, with a visitation prior from noon to 1 p.m. Visitation also will be from 4 to 8 p.m. Thursday, November 30 at the funeral home. Burial will take place at Spring Hill Cemetery in Danville. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made in his name to the Danville Humane Society. Please join John's family in sharing photos and memories on his tribute wall at www.sunsetfuneralhome.com. The next obituary is for Sid Anderson, age 88, of Milford, who passed away Saturday, November 25, 2017, at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Visitation will be 5 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, November 28, at the Knapp Funeral Home in Milford. Private family graveside services will be at Maple Grove Cemetery in Milford, with military rites by the Hoopston American Legion. Memorials may be made to the Milford Swimming Pool or Danville Humane Society. Please share a memory of Sid at knappfuneralhome.com. The next obituary is for Lena M. Marbury, who peacefully passed away Friday, November 24, 2017, at her daughter's home in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. A celebration of life will commence at noon Friday, December 1, at New Life Church of Faith, 1419 North Bowman Avenue, Danville. Visitation will begin at 11 a.m. until the start of the service. Officiating will be Pastor U. D. Williams. Interment will be in the Danville National Cemetery. Leek & Sons Funeral Home, 304 East Williams, Danville, is in charge of arrangements. Condolences and memorials may be sent by accessing www.leekandsonsfuneralhome.com. funeralhome.com. The next obituary is for Carl R. Powell, age 68, of Oakwood, who passed away November 24, 2017, at Presence United Samaritan Medical Center in Danville. A celebration of life service will be at 10 a.m. Wednesday, November 29, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center, 3940 North Vermilion Street, Danville. Pastor David Garver will officiate. Burial will be in Newtown Cemetery. Visitation will be 5 to 8 p.m. Tuesday, November 28, at the funeral home. Memorials may be made to the Cancer Treatment Center for Patient Comfort Needs at 806 North Logan Avenue, Danville. You can join Carl's family in sharing memories, photos, and videos on his tribute wall at www.sunsetfuneralhome.com. And another obituary for Lisa Michelle Johnson, age 52, of Danville, passed away November 21, 2017, at her residence. A memorial service will commence at noon, Friday, December 1, 2017, at Leek and Sons Funeral Home, 304 East William Street, Danville. Visitation will begin at 11 a.m. until the start of the service. Officiating will be Pastor Courtney Watson. Leek and Sons Funeral Home, Danville, is in charge of arrangements. And that concludes the obituaries in today's paper for now. Returning to the news, we find an article, a Danville article, in the Champaign News Gazette. Three girls arrested in carjacking at Danville's Village Mall. Police arrested three female juveniles early Sunday morning in connection with a carjacking Saturday afternoon at the Village Mall. Danville Public Safety Director Larry Thompson said a little after 1 a.m. Sunday, police officers spotted the Ford Sport utility vehicle taken from the mall at 2917 North Vermilion Street, Danville, stopped it, and arrested three female juveniles they found inside. He said all three were being held on preliminary charges of aggravated vehicular hijacking. The hijacking occurred around 12:30 p.m. Saturday, according to Thomason, when two young women took a car from another woman in the parking lot at the mall. No one was injured, Thomason said, and no weapons were seen, but one of the suspects implied that she had a gun. That concludes that. And here's an article about several school districts in Vermilion County who are promoting a one-cent tax for school facilities. The article begins with this, Salt Fork School Superintendent Phil Cox is pleased that the first phase of a roof replacement project at the South Campus and Junior High School in Jamaica is wrapping up. But there's still a long list of looming capital improvement projects. Phase two of the roof work, expanding the North Campus's elementary parking lot and improving drainage. Replacing old windows at the North Campus and addressing old boilers at South Campus and High School. And little or no capital to do them. Cox said these are just the operational things. There are other things we'd like to do to improve educational opportunities, like updating the science labs. And a lot of our classrooms only have two outlets. So we need to improve our technology infrastructure as we look forward to one-to-one computers. Vermilion County voters could be asked in March to approve a new revenue stream that could help fund Salt Fork's improvements along with much-needed school facility projects throughout the county. There are 11 school districts in the county. The school boards of all but one, Danville, have already approved or are planning to approve a resolution that would put a referendum asking voters to approve a one-cent county schools facility tax on the March 20 primary ballot. A proposal would need approval by a simple majority to pass. If approved, the tax would start being collected in July, and school districts would start receiving payments around November. The sales tax revenue would be collected by the Illinois Department of Revenue, then go to Regional School Superintendent Cheryl Reistick's office, which would distribute it to local district based on student enrollment. Illinois voters have had the option to approve the tax since 2007. Items that fall under the tax: clothes, household goods, appliances, gas, eating out, and most other retail expenses. Items that are exempt from the proposed tax would be groceries, medicine and vitamins, vehicles, mobile homes, ATVs, RVs, boats, farm equipment, seed, and fertilizer. Ultimately, it's a penny tax, said Cox. If your family goes out for a meal and spends $40, you're going to be paying an extra 40 cents. 49 other counties have it. Cox and Westfield School Superintendent Seth Miller said the tax shifts facility funding away from property taxes, school districts' only means of raising money, since state construction funds pretty much dried up years ago. When districts borrow the money, debt payments also fall on taxpayers. Sales tax is something everyone contributes to, Miller said, adding that it's spread out among all Vermilion County residents, as well as non-residents who work or visit the county. Currently, they added 49 counties, including neighboring Champaign, Edgar, Douglas, and Piatt, have it on their books. He went on to say, anytime someone from Vermilion County goes shopping in Champaign County, which probably happens a lot, they are contributing to those schools in Champaign County. But anytime someone from Champaign County shops in Vermilion County, eats out, buys gas, they are not contributing anything to our schools. Cox went on to say, Think about things like local sporting events, the Midwest Classic Show Choir Competition, or the National Junior College AA Tournament at the Danville Area Community College that bring people to the county. While they're here eating at restaurants, staying in hotels, buying gas, they could be contributing so we can upgrade our facilities. Miller said districts are limited in how they can use the money. He said it is not for higher teacher salaries or new computers or textbooks. He said adding the money can be used for construction, renovation, maintenance and repairs, energy efficient work, and paying off building bond debt, which in turn would allow districts to abate property taxes. Here's Westville District's plan. If a resolution is put on the ballot and approved, Miller said Westville stands to gain $550,000 for facilities. He said the district would put $350,000 a year toward bond debt instead of levying taxes to meet the obligations, a 13% decrease in the tax rate based on the last levy. He projects that the owner of a $100,000 home would see a $205 decrease in their tax bill to the district, while the owner of a $200,000 home would see a $455 decrease. Miller said leftover CSFT money would be used on preventive maintenance, including HVAC system controls at all schools, boiler, pipe, and roof work at the high school. We want to stop small problems before they become big problems, Miller said. He also said the district's third priority would be to improve educational opportunities. Under a tentative plan, the district would build an early childhood center at Giacomo Elementary, which would have a cafeteria capable of hosting district-wide pre-K activities and daily PE for all students. Tentative plans also call for building on additional classroom space and renovating the cafeteria and locker rooms at the junior high, allowing for sixth grade instruction and building a performing arts auditorium, renovating restrooms and sports areas at the high school, and installing air conditioning in the varsity gym. In order for the referendum to be put on the ballot, REFSEC must certify that districts approving the resolution represent more than 50% of students in Vermilion County. What it means. A proposed 1 cent school facilities tax for Vermilion County is projected to raise about $5.3 million a year for improvements based on 2015-16 sales tax figures. Here are the approximate estimates of what each district would receive. The Danville District would receive $2,500,000, Westville $550,000, Hoopston $423,000, Georgetown Ridge Farm $421,000, Oakwood $421,000, Bismarck Henning would receive $373,000, Salt Fork $372,000. Rossville Alvin would receive $129,000, Potomac $72,000, and Armstrong Township High School $39,000, and the Armstrong Ellis District would receive $27,000. Well, that concludes the article about the proposal to have a 1 cent sales tax on some items in Vermilion County to support improvements and developments in schools across the county. Over on the opinion page, we see an article of Give Thanks to Our Founders for Their Enduring System. Thanksgiving weekend has just passed, but here's a review of Thanksgiving and what it really means to celebrate Thanksgiving in this country. Thanksgiving is a joyous and grateful time of the year when families gather together to express their gratitude for all that the good Lord has bestowed on us and our country. This uniquely American celebration began with the first Thanksgiving of English pilgrims who overcame huge hardships, hunger, sickness, and fear to establish the first self-governing settlement in America. Historian Nathan Philbrook, writing in the book Mayflower, said, "We do not know the exact date of the celebration we now call the first Thanksgiving, but it was probably in late September or early October, soon after their crop of corn, squash, beans, barley, and peas had been harvested." A gripping account. In his book, The Mayflower, he describes a gripping account of the people who set out on a perilous voyage to the New World on September 6, 1620. A year later, having survived a bitter winter off Plymouth Harbor and other perils, their leader, William Bradford, declared it time to rejoice together after a more special manner, in his quote. That led to an historic feast that included roasted ducks, geese, wild turkeys, and other fowl, and some unexpected gifts of freshly killed deer from Massasoit and 100 or so Pokanokets who unexpectedly showed up at their frail settlement in a remarkable act of friendship. In his book, Philbrook writes, the term Thanksgiving, first applied in the 19th century, was not used by the pilgrims themselves. For the pilgrims, a Thanksgiving was a time of spiritual devotion, and so it is for most Americans nearly four centuries later. This is one day that is ours, legendary short story author O. Henry once wrote. Thanksgiving Day is the one day that is purely American. It is a time when we can collectively give thanks for the many freedoms we enjoy in this country that allow our citizens to pursue their life's dreams to create, grow, build, and prosper. A time when we express our gratitude that the Founding Fathers established a government of checks and balances under a Constitution, where its Bill of Rights declares that Congress, quote, shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or the right of the people peacefully to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. These protections are written into the supreme law of our land. Yet there are now voices nowadays that seem to suggest that some freedoms need to be reexamined and perhaps even modified. It is alarming in this regard to hear our political leaders say that the press is the enemy of America, and that the people who are silently yet peacefully expressing their displeasure on some issue or other should be silenced or punished. This year, holiday came at a critical time in our country's history, when our people are deeply divided over a growing number of political issues, and indeed the future direction of our nation. But I believe, the writer says, that in the end, the constitutional structure of government that our founding fathers built will be able to withstand our present troubles and overcome them. So let us be grateful to live in this blessed land of the free, secure in the belief and the hope that it will remain that way for many centuries to come. This column was written by syndicated columnist Donald Lambro, who's been covering Washington politics for 50 years as a reporter, editor, and commentator. Over in the Community Briefs column, we see at Danville a painting party planned. November's Color Splash Party at the Danville Art League, 320 North Franklin Street, will feature painting with acrylic paint on pre-fired ceramic Christmas pieces. Carol Garver will be the instructor from 6 to 8:30 p.m. Thursday. For information, you can call the Art League at 217-442-9263. The office is open 9 a.m. to noon, Tuesday to Saturday. There will be talent on display. The Danville Public Library encourages teenagers to share their talent in the Teen Fall Talent Show, 5 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, in the first floor meeting room at the library. This is for teens ages 12 to 18. And that's all I'm going to have time for today. So this is Don saying goodbye for now. It has been a pleasure to read for you on Tuesday, November 20th.